Welcome to Fire is Orange, a short story compilation by number one New York Times bestselling author, Scott Segler!
Ten titillating tales to tantalize your thoughts.
Hello, junkies. We have two stories for you today. Both read by my awesome business partner, AB Kovacs, a real girl herself. Yes, she is also an audiobook narrator. As you listen to these stories, if you like the sound of her voice, like the way she tells a story, swing over to Audible or iTunes and search for books by KC Alexander. That's K period C period Alexander. If you like my more foul-mouthed stuff, you might like KC's stuff as well. So this episode of Fire is Orange is a very different take from what you have heard so far. We have two stories. The first one is called The Laundry Demon, and it is a funny little story I did a while back. And the second story is called Puppet Master, and this one's a little bit deeper. It's a little bit more personal. And I think you'll hear why when you listen to it. As with all the stories in the Fire is Orange collection, you'll hear the author's note for each story first, then the story itself. And I'll give you more details on each story in the author's notes. After this episode, I will give you an update on my progress for Mount Fitzroy, the long-awaited sequel to Earthcore. For now, though, fire up that there imagination, because we're about to hit black gold! Yee-haw! Author's note for Laundry Demon. Frankly, I have no idea why I wrote this story. Maybe there was a bet. I'm not sure if the bet was, can I write a story about a demon that washes a wizard's socks, or if I lost the bet and then I had to write the story as a consequence. Maybe I was drunk. Maybe I was very, very tired. I honestly don't remember. I hope you liked it.
The Laundry Demon. How the hell should I know where your socks are? Hartmundus stared at the demon. He stared hard. From time to time, you had to do that with demons. Stare, that is, lest they forgot who was in charge. You should know because you are my laundry demon. You did the laundry. The demon rolled his bulging red eyes. I wash everything you put in me. If you didn't pull a sock out of me, then guess what? You didn't put one in. Hartmundus held up a single sock for the laundry demon to see. It was a blue fabric woven from the tail hairs of a unicorn, knitted by his tailor demon. While Hartmundus didn't technically have to pay for any of his demons, so the labor was free, acquiring a good supply of unicorn tails hadn't come cheap. Unicorn tail socks, squeezed and massaged, made his old feet feel so much better inside his halfling skin boots. He shook the sock. It waved slowly, as magical fabric often did. I only have one! What good does a single sock do me? The laundry demon shrugged. I don't know, Master, as until I met you, I'd never seen socks before. Honestly, why don't you just use leggings like everyone else? Two separate pieces of clothing when you could have one? It doesn't make sense. I don't think this whole sock business is going to catch on, if I may say so. You may not say so, Hartmundus said. You may tell me that you are doing my laundry correctly, and you are banishing all dust and grease and all other grimy bits to the realm from whence you came, but that is all the dialogue I wish to hear from you. If that's all, then why did you ask me about the missing sock? Because you lost it!
The laundry demon blinked twice.
I assure you, Master, I did not.
Hartmundus shook the sock again.
lies! Your kind always lies! Do you remember why I put you down here?"
The demon's pus-streaked, blistered hands gestured to the walls.
"Do I remember why you put me in your castle dungeon? It's called a basement. A dark, dank, barely lit place made of stone beneath your castle isn't a dungeon anymore?"
"Well, parts of it are," Hartmunda said. "But this part is the laundry room. Laundry rooms go in basements, not in dungeons."
The laundry demon sighed.
"Where do you get this stuff?"
"I am a seer," Hartmunda said. "I can see into the future. Kind of."
"And you see dungeons that aren't dungeons?"
"Correct, as you say," Hartmunda said. "And I also see socks, so your idea that they will not catch on is incorrect."
The laundry demon rubbed his distended belly. Hartmundus had made that belly bigger to handle all the laundry. When the laundry demon arrived, and when he was a different kind of demon, his belly was of a size that it would handle only a few garments at once. Since then, the powerful steel mage had extended the demon's belly by a factor of 6.5. He would have extended the belly by 7, but that was a power number, and he dared not risk mixing magic and math. Still, an increase of 6.5 times made it possible to do almost all of the laundering in one load, and that was a good thing.
"You are angering me," Hartmunda said. "This is the 8th time I have finished a load of laundry and had only one sock from a pair. That means I have 8 single socks."
"Can't you wear one on each foot? Then you'd have another 4 pairs to wear." "I know I have to do the laundry anyway, Master, but the longer I can go between loads, the longer I get to avoid having your nasty socks in my mouth."
Sparks crackled. The black beard of Hartmundus flared out, lifted by eldritch energy. That happened when he got mad.
"You call my feet nasty? How dare you?"
The laundry demon looked away. He seemed bored.
"You know the rules, Master. You cannot punish me for speaking the truth. I mean, the whole reason I am here is because of the lies I spoke."
"And because you ate the livers of 112 children."
"Most of those kids were going to die anyway. What's the life expectancy of you humans, 25?
"Yes, but only because of the Black Plague. Before that, people lived far longer on average."
The laundry demon shrugged.
"So, in a way, I saved those children from a much worse death. Anyway, you caught me in a lie, and that's how you bound me to your basement dungeon. As long as I tell the truth, you can't punish me for what I say, right?"
Hartmunda sighed. The sparks faded. His black beard dropped back down to his chest.
"You are correct, laundry demon."
"Well, Master, I take no joy in telling you that, yes, your feet are disgusting. They stink. They sweat so bad that not even unicorn hair can absorb it all. And did I mention that I have to put your socks in my mouth? We have words in the demon language for how awful your feet smell, but humans can't pronounce them."
The steel wizard smiled an evil smile. "I can't punish you for telling the truth. But there is nothing in the binding code that won't let me transfer you to a new position." The laundry demon's red eyes widened.
"A new position?"
"Yes," Hartmunda said. "I'm not sure the toilet demon is working out." "And I've been gazing further into the future. I've seen this new delicacy that is called a burrito."
"What's in a burrito?"
"It contains beans," Hartmunda said. "Many of them. Plus beef. But you know how hard it is to find cattle these days. So I will have to settle for that old donkey I keep at the back of the barn. I imagine the ground meat of the old donkey will be less than agreeable to my sensitive digestive system.
The laundry demon wiped his sweating, pus-slimed forehead.
Ah, I see. Then, Master, I must tell you the truth. I was kidding before. About your feet, I mean. I have upset you, so now I will tell you the real truth. Your socks actually smell a little bit like cake.
Hardmundus crossed his arms and smiled wider.
My feet smell like cake. I rather like that.
Vanilla, the laundry demon said. I very much enjoy laundering your socks in my mouth and belly because it is much like eating cake.
The steel mage pointed a finger at the laundry demon.
Lose one more sock, and you will be transferred to toilet duty.
The laundry demon shook his head and waved his hands in denial, sending threads of pus all across the floor of the dungeon basement. He very much did not want to take over the duties of the toilet demon. That job would be bad enough even without the bean and old donkey burritos.
But, Master, I tell the truth.
The truth? Or the real truth?
The real, real, real truth. I only wash what I am given. Perhaps the missing socks were spirited away by some form of evil magic.
Sparks flew again. The black beard of Hartmundus again lifted up and spread out. The dungeon basement filled with his powerful light.
No one does magic in my castle. No one but me.
The laundry demon very much wished he could go back in time some 22 years and tell the truth about directions to the inn on the borderlands. He had meant to lure the wizard away and eat him. But why? He hadn't needed the meal at all. He'd just eaten the livers of three children, one of whom was Swedish, and everyone knows how filling those were. But the demon had gotten greedy. He'd tried to trick the wizard, been caught in a lie, and now he had another 78 years of washing laundry if he was lucky.
Master, please, is it not possible that some other force is making the socks vanish? Perhaps they lose socks in the future.
Hardmundus let out a noise of disgust.
You do not understand the future, demon. It is a place full of marvels. The descendants of humanity could never be so careless as to let a magical force steal one sock from a pair. No, you must stop losing my socks, or your new job awaits. And if you get that job, you know what I will be doing, correct?
For the first time in three centuries, the demon felt real fear.
You'll be bringing that donkey into the kitchen.
Hardmundus smiled.
Correct as you say. And the kitchen demon tells me he is expecting a wagon load of black beans from the farmland this very week.
The steel mage turned sharply, his black robes flaring and trailing behind him as he stormed away, leaving the laundry demon to contemplate his future. A future where one sock could spell doom.
Author's note for Puppet Master. There's nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at the typewriter and bleed. That quote is often attributed to Ernest Hemingway. While the true source of the quote is debatable, the original is most likely attributed to sports writer Red Smith, the meaning is clear. That meaning? Good writing comes from personal pain. We all like to see characters win. We like to see them be strong. But it's when they lose, when they hurt, that's when we fall in love with them. Bleeding on the page means that the writer channels his or her own real-life emotional experiences into the fictions painted into the story. This is a lesson writers learn over and over again. As life moves on, as new experiences are stacked like chips in an ever-rising tower of sadness and joy. This story, Puppet Master, is about one of my stacked chips. when my horrible life choices wound up burning bridges that should have been forged in steel, not cobbled together with wood. It was a time of deep pain for me, of knowing that I'd brought that hurt not only on myself, but someone I loved as well. In the strange worlds of art, that pain, even the self-inflicted, especially the self-inflicted, is a gift that keeps on giving, that you can draw from and pour into your characters for as long as you can create them. When we bleed, our characters bleed too. And in that blood, we can bring them to life.
Puppet Master. I learned to write because of her. Because I lost her.
Don't be a prick. I knew how to write. Who the fuck doesn't?
I mean write. I mean put the little letters together that make word hooks I slide into you like a ventriloquist shoving his hand up a puppet's ass. My words can make your mouth move with laughter. They can make your guts clench in anguish and trepidation. They can make your eyes water and your nose run. I can teleport thoughts into your head, beam emotions into your soul. I can make you dance. I can make you cry. I can make you hurt. I can create someone who never existed and make you love that person. You ever think about that? I can make you love. Love something that isn't there. That was never there. That isn't anywhere but some black lines on a field of white. I used to know how to put words into sentences. Now I know how to fuck with your head. Next time you read a story and you feel that heat below your eyes, you feel that sting, remember that's someone pulling your strings. Remember that someone is working you like a puppet. Because of her, I learned how to do that to you. Send her a card or something. Say thanks, because we both know you'll take whatever I dish out and come back for more. Sometimes you get cut. Sometimes there's a scab. You always think it's healed because the edges are flaking up and crusty, white and almost see-through. And you pick at it, and you poke at it, and you pull it just a little. Then you tear it off. You're not supposed to bleed, right? Because it's healed. But that flesh beneath ain't finished cooling yet. It oozes. Sometimes blood, sometimes plasma. But shit wells up out of it. Shit you didn't know was there. That's this. When she left, she tore me. She tore what I thought I was. And shit oozed up. Shit I didn't know was there. Emotions. I had them. I wasn't a goddamn robot. I loved. I laughed. I hurt. I just didn't know I was in the minor leagues. Do I know hurt? Yeah, now I do. Now I'm in the major leagues. Now I'm in the fucking Hall of Fame. They should name a stadium after me, like that. Want to know the best part? I'm sure you guessed. I did it to myself. I fucked up my own life knowing I was doing it while I was doing it, knowing I had an easy out, but not taking it. To think, all I had to do was tell the truth. I didn't. And because of it, I got to taste the word goodbye. If you've had that meal, you know. Some of you think you know. You're looking at the imaginary friend right next to you, giving that all-knowing bro nod, that signal that says, been there, done that, and I'm still alive. It didn't kill you? Then you don't know. You just don't. I never believed in immortality. Not since I was about 19, anyway. I know that someday all the loveliness just shuts off and I start to leak. I know there's an end to life. But after her, I really understood that I was dead. It was only a matter of time until the lights went out. When she left, I lost my life. And no, for that, I did not send her a card. I still eat. I still drink. I still shit and walk and yell at the TV and bitch and piss and moan, and I most certainly still fuck because it gives me that split second when I'm not thinking of anything, when I'm not thinking of her, when I'm not wondering what she'd think of this show or that movie or that book or what her lips taste like today, and I am not thinking of who is making her not think for that same split second. I think about that a lot. It's why I have a gun. I'll never use it, probably. I like to fuck with your head. I like to make you feel, make you cry. Deal with it. You and I are so goddamn codependent anyway, and it's not going to change. I like to make you hurt, and you want the flavors I serve up. So which one of us is more fucked up? Well, sure, me, but it's kind of a mandatory rhetorical question. So, if you ever see her, thank her for what I do. And thank her for me. Because at least I had a shot. You poor fucker. You'll never know what she was like. You'll never understand. You'll live your short little life and won't even be aware of what you missed. I know.
That is it for episode number 3 of Fire is Orange. Quite a contrast in stories, don't you think? Did you like A's reading? I really enjoy A's reading. She also narrated my novel Alone, which is book 3 of the Generations trilogy. So if you have not heard the Generations trilogy, the first two books are read by Emma Galvin, the last book is read by Kovacs. Go check that out. Before the episode, I told you that after the episode I would give you an update on Mount Fitzroy. As of the day I'm recording this episode, which is October 31st, 2019, I am 70,000 words into the final draft of Mount Fitzroy. Sounds like a lot, except the book is 230,000 words long right now. That's about a 700 to 750 page paperback book. It's huge. Fitzroy is a bit of a slow burner, but if you have read Earthcore, I think you will be on the edge of your seat as we build up the structure and ramp up to the action. And there are surprises in this book. If you have read all of my modern-day thrillers, Infected, Contagious, Pandemic, Ancestor, Nocturnal, and Earthcore, I think you will be absolutely delighted with those surprises. I hope so. If you haven't read those books, don't sweat it. You don't need to read them to enjoy Mount Fitzroy. Except you do need to read Earthcore before Fitzroy comes out. Mandatory homework, junkies. And if you've already listened to Earthcore or read Earthcore, I highly advise that as we get closer to the release of Fitzroy, that you get ready to reread or re-listen to Earthcore and then roll right into Mount Fitzroy. I think that'll maximize your enjoyment. It'll be the best use of your time for enjoying these stories. They really tie in very, very closely together. I will keep you informed of the progress of Mount Fitzroy, of course, right on this very podcast. And Fitzroy should be out around May of 2020. That is the tentative release date, but we won't know for sure until we submit the final draft to a publisher that we can't name right now. Mysterious. But that is it for this week. We will be back next week with episode number 4 of Fire is Orange. And until then, I will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to Fire is Orange, a short story compilation by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Narrated by Scott Sigler, Ray Porter, and A. Kovacs. Produced by A. Kovacs. Engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Copyright 2019, Empty Set Entertainment. All rights reserved. For more information about the author, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music by the band Amps and Volts.